Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, Chris Evans here, and this is the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up on the show, Virgin Radio's very own Graham Norton joins us live from Turin ahead of this year's sure-to-be-fabulous Darling Eurovision Song Contest. Scottish superstar Emily Sandé chats about her brand-spanking-new album, Let's Say For Instance. TV and radio presenter Mylene Klass flicks through her new book, They Don't Teach This at School, and the repair shop's very own Jay Blades takes us through his wonderful new autobiography, Making It, How Love, Kindness and Community Helped Me Repair My Life. All of that and so much more to come. So Dapper Dave, pray tell, who's first?
He's the king of weekend airwaves, and outrageous European pop wouldn't be the same without him. That's right, the Eurovision Song Contest final is live on BBC One tomorrow night at 8 p.m. And here to tell us if the UK will be up in space, man, or down at the bottom with Neil Poir, man, is Virgin Radio's very own Graham Norton!
Good morning, Graham!
Oh, good morning, everybody. Hello.
So a bittersweet morning this morning from an Irish point of view, from an Irish / Eurovision point of view, Graham.
Yes, poor old Brooke. She didn't get through last night. And some terrible things did. I mean, that's always the shocker that, you know, you kind of think, you know, only 10 get through out of the 17 in the semifinals. But yeah, keep an eye out for Estonia. I mean, it's one of the worst things I've ever seen, but it got through. But there you go.
Any explanation as to why, perhaps?
Well, I mean, I think it is that thing. I mean, staging is really important. And you know, Brooke's very young, and it's a big, big stage. It's kind of what happened to our guys the last few years. You know, when you see them by themselves, you kind of think, oh, actually, that's okay, and that sounds quite nice. But when you put them on that big stage with all these other people, they get lost a bit. And I think that's what's happened to us, and that's what happened to Brooke last night, I think.
Now, I have an audio. I didn't see it last night, Graham. Do forgive me. I have audio of Brooke's performance, and it sounds pretty cool. I mean, here we go. It sounds like, you know, Brooke is actually doing all the right things, but you would know better than I. Let's have a quick listen. See, now, could you, with your past, your wisdom, you're now plentiful wisdom as far as Eurovision is concerned, would you not be called as a mentor to Ireland's entry in the future? And, you know, backstage, bit of coaching, bit of...
I'd have told her not to wear those blue boots. They looked like they came free with a fancy dress outfit.
Yeah.
The whole thing, her outfit had a whiff of Debenhams closing down sale. And she's cool. She's a young, cool kid. And they dressed her as a kind of, I don't know, slutty bridesmaid. And it was, it wasn't great.
Okay.
So I think lessons to be learned.
Okay. Graham, you sound very cool, very relaxed, very in the moment, as always, which is your usual modus operandi. How's the vibe in Turin?
Well, I don't really know yet, because I've just been stuck in this strange hotel since I got here. When I arrived at the airport, and I like this, I was met by wheelchair assistants. I thought, oh, did they see the pictures of me in the mail after the BAFTAs? But I don't know. But there was a wheelchair waiting for me. I'm not that old.
Did you take advantage of the wheelchair?
Fine.
Or did you offer it to somebody, more needy of it?
No, I didn't. I said thank you very much, but I'll use my legs.
I'm looking
and
here.
I got through that way.
Graham, the out and out favourites, basically they've already won for obvious reasons. Is Ukraine at 4-11 or 11-4 on, as one might also say at the bookies?
The thing I would say about Ukraine, the thing, obviously there's a huge emotional outpouring about Ukraine,
yep,
and people will be voting with their hearts, but also it is a great Eurovision song. So even if the world was the way it was a few years ago,
Ukraine would still be doing very well. It's not just about the situation in Ukraine. It's also a great, great song.
Fortunately for Ukraine, they're in that position, and that's all. That's absolutely 100%, more than 100% wonderful, 1,000,000% wonderful and beyond. But unfortunately for us this year, we would have been favourites otherwise at 6-1. Is that a real, is that a believable stat from an odds point of view? A second favourite, 6-1 for Sam Ryder?
Who knows? Look, I think... I like the way we're now upset we're not going to win. It's like, come on, guys. We've been at the bottom of this thing for the last 2 years. We got no points the last time it was Eurovision. So I think left-hand side of the scoreboard is a win. It's great. And what's brilliant, you've met Sam, Chris. You've had him on your show, and you know what he's like. He's such a ray of sunshine. He is so positive. And what I love about him is that he's kind of flipped the whole competition on its head, and he's not getting kind of bogged down by where he's coming in the competition. He is just having the time of his life. He's really enjoying it and using it as an amazing kind of shop window and opportunity the way you should. So whatever happens tomorrow night, I think he will be fine. And he is doing an amazing job. He's like, we went into a lab and created a Eurovision entry. Yep. He's terrific. I'm so impressed by him.
Super cool. And how are you? So you've done this before. How many years now? And how does your own sort of experience of it this year compare to the first time you ever did it, for example?
Well, it's nice going in with a song that you think will do well. That is a perky feeling. So it means I won't have to... I mean, because it is difficult in the scoring. Like, you know, last year or the year before when we were doing really badly and, you know, you're only broadcasting to the United Kingdom, it is difficult to keep your spirits up. So hopefully that won't be a problem tomorrow night. But this is my, I don't know, I've been doing this 2009. Right. And I think in the years I've been doing it, we've only been on the left of the scoreboard twice. So... come on, Sam Ryder.
Do it for Graham, if nobody or nothing else. Where do we have to be on the left side? We have to be in the top what?
12, I think. 12 or 13.
Okay. Surely that's got to happen. We'll see. Anyways, tomorrow...
I know, that doesn't sound hard. But like I say, we've only done it twice in the last 13 years.
Yeah, it's your fault. It's ever since you've been hosting blimmin' Eurovision.
Yes, blame me.
Yeah, I shall. Graham Norton live from Turin. Thank you, Graham.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Woo!
Thanks.
Emily, how are you?
I'm very good, thanks. How are you?
Oh, my goodness me. You didn't leave anything on the pitch there, did you?
Yeah, just leave it on the table.
How's it for you?
Yeah, lovely. I'm really enjoying playing today. Thanks for having us.
Thanks to the band as well, guys. Round of applause for the band, everybody. Smashing it this morning. Is this the earliest you've sung this loud ever in your life?
Yes, I believe so, yeah.
What time did you have to wake up to warm up?
It was a 4 a.m. wake up today.
4 a.m.
But we got there.
I saw you having your makeup done lying down. Yeah. That is a good look.
It was necessary.
I know. Have you ever done that before? It looked like you had.
This week we've started it because it's been quite busy.
Really?
But yeah, big up Charlie for that. Thanks.
Oh, my goodness me. You seem like a really happy gang.
Yeah, we're having a lot of fun. We're going on tour soon, so we're really excited.
Yeah, it's Monday, isn't it?
Yeah, Monday. We're starting in Glasgow.
Okay, if you want to go and see Emily Sandé, tickets on sale at emilysandé.com. Talking about Glasgow and Leeds. This is in May and Digbeth and Manchester, London, Glasgow again, Leeds again, Manchester, Birmingham. Then off to Europe.
Yep.
How do you fare? Like a good wine. How do you travel?
I try and be classy, but you know,
yeah.
A few days on the tour bus, then that goes out the window.
Tell us about, people don't get this. You know, I've tour bused. Oh, clearly the band now like, oh, the tour bus. I can hear your thoughts. I can feel the quickening of your heart and the cortisol now riven in your veins. It's not at all as glamorous and rock and roll as people think, really, is it?
I mean, it's cool. I mean, I like being on it because it rocks you to sleep. The vibrations of the bus are really nice.
Well, you say that. I mean, some people can do the tour bus sleep. Some people can't. I can't do it. I couldn't master
it. Yeah.
You can.
I love it.
That's because you're an honest soul.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, I think so. There's peace at the centre of Emily Sandé. Million miles from medical school.
Yeah, that far from there now.
Was it 3 years at medical school for you?
I did 4 years.
Four years.
And then came here, started writing for people for a year, and then thankfully got signed. And here I am 10 years later.
10th anniversary this year, is it?
Yeah, the first album.
Congratulations,
Thank you. Well done.
Is it true that you did write songs, you know, whilst sitting in lectures and things like that? Is that
my mind would definitely wander, and on the side of kind of the notes, I'd be trying to rhyme stuff. And so at that point, I thought maybe I should try and follow this dream a little bit.
Do you have any of those original lyrics still?
There might be somewhere in my parents' garage somewhere. Yeah, I might ask them to dig them out.
What else is in your parents' garage?
Oh,
what
a lot memorabilia? Of stuff. A lot of junk, yeah.
Yeah, wow. And here we are, 10th anniversary of the Olympics, that happened just down the road.
Yeah, that was an amazing time.
Yeah, I mean, you were the opening and closing ceremony, weren't you?
Yeah.
Did anybody else double up that you can recall?
I don't think so. I don't think it was even planned that I was going to be... I was just asked by both teams. So, yeah, it was an honour to be there.
That was so magical, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was the calm before the mad storm, which has been, you know, been sort of everything and continuing that happened after it. Just let's get back to basics there. Brighter Days. Mm-hmm. There's the title. We've heard the sentiment. Mm-hmm. What is it about for you, that song?
Oh, when we made this song, we just wanted to give a bit of hope, a bit of music that's uplifting. You know, it was the first time I'd been back in the studio. I was there with Ollie Green, who produced it, and Moises. And we just wanted to do a song that would bring people together. You know, we didn't know if we're going to get to perform live again, but we thought if we get to, we want to write a song that would be perfect for a live performance.
Isn't that crazy? So you genuinely thought, will we ever be performing live again?
Yeah, I genuinely thought I would have to kind of retrain into something else or go back to school or something, because you couldn't perform live, you couldn't really do anything. So I just feel so grateful now. Every time I get to sing, be on stage, I don't take it for granted.
You know, we had our festival, we've got them again this year, our festivals, Carfest, North and South, and other festivals that we're involved in. In fact, one this weekend, Pub in the Park, down in Marlow, et cetera, et cetera. And I'll never forget that first, because so our first festival took place on the Thursday after the Tuesday that the government lifted all lockdown guidelines as far as live events were concerned.
Okay.
And we built it anyway. It was a 6-week build, and we were taking a chance, and we thought we've just got to go for it.
Yeah.
You know, we were very fortunate it paid off. But that weekend, you know, there were tears. Almost every performer, especially Rag and Bone Man, cried through their first two songs.
Yeah.
They couldn't hold the tears back. You know, and it seems like that sort of gratitude is staying with them. It's sticking around.
Yeah, absolutely. Every time I'm on stage, it's just because at any minute, hopefully not, it could all be taken away again.
Yeah.
So I think that's the biggest lesson I've been taught. Be in the moment, be present, and just be grateful that we're all together.
Yeah, now we know, don't we?
Yeah.
Now we know, like our parents knew before us, but we hadn't experienced it.
Exactly.
Because until you've been there, until you felt the pain, you don't know what the pain feels like. So let's say, for instance, is the title of the album. Tell us, because that's a funky title.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm not sure what it means. Tell me a bit more about that.
I just wanted to try and encourage people to imagine, you know, often it's hard to get out of, you know, negative thought patterns until you say, well, let's say, for instance, it's not as bad as
so
you think.
Cool.
Let's say, for instance, you know, there will be brighter days, all of that. I want the listener to finish the sentence themselves.
Well, let's say, for instance, you know, just picture if you, just take a second.
Exactly.
I love it, Emily. I love it. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you.
You're awesome.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
From radio play with hearsay to present day presenting on telly and radio, she can do it all and then some. Her tip-top Tips for Life book, They Don't Teach This at School, is out now. And here to tell us all about it is a class act by name and a class act by nature. It's Mylene Klass!
Yay! Mylene! Just me then. Seriously. How are you, Mylene?
I'm very well. I like that intro.
Yeah.
Class.
Yes. Well, make the most of them, because you've been in this for a long time now, haven't you?
3.5 years.
Well done, pal. They're awesome. Mylene, what a book. What a
Thank
great book.
You.
Congratulations.
Thank
this is,
you.
It's just, it's fun. It's useful. It's got form. It's got function. It's got pickies. You know, it's lighthearted. It can get a bit serious. It's this book of things that we all need to know, because along with your publishers, our very own HarperCollins here in this very building, you have discovered that 82% of adults would like to know more things that they haven't sort of had passed down to them via their education or their generations.
I just think it's one of those things, you know, when you're just, you know, sitting with your friends and chatting about, I don't know, the PSI on your car or what you do in certain situations. I don't know how many times I've said, I wish they taught this at school. I just wish I knew this, because my daughter's right in the middle of her exams, and the stuff she's looking at, I mean, it's admirable, but I don't remember when I last used trigonometry or the cells of a plant, but I do remember, in fact, when I had to just go and unblock the drain. So just little things like that are super
handy. Should put it on the curriculum, shouldn't they?
I totally agree. That's a whole other story.
Two hours a week, you know, of stuff that's fun.
Well, my own kids' teachers have bought the book, which just shows that we're working hand in hand on this, but they recognise it too.
God bless all the teachers.
Absolutely.
They don't set the agenda, they just have to fulfil the agenda.
But there's stuff in there like, you know, for CPR, first aid, basic first aid. If you do a survey of the room, how many people would be able to, you know, to perform CPR or just even know what to do if someone fainted?
Yeah, and it's
scary.
It's already saved a life, this book, hasn't
saved
it?
Saved two lives already.
Tell us about that.
So my daughters and I, we made some TikTok videos, like condensed version, 60-second long, of what's in the book.
Right.
So everything from knowing a toolbox, the difference between a flathead and a Phillips screwdriver and changing a light bulb, all the way through to how to perform CPR or if someone's choking. And my two choking videos were watched, one for a baby, which then went on to save a baby,
wow,
6 months, 7 months old. And a gentleman watched one of my videos and he saved his wife. She was choking on chicken. I put his letter to me in the book. I was so moved that it was something that had just triggered a memory in him and just he knew what to do in that time. And that's often the time when you panic.
It's just a great book. Body and Soul, chapter one. Let's talk about chapter three. But for example, you know, let's talk about how best to talk about things, how to talk about basic finance. You know,
my dad
passed away when I was 13, right? And so I didn't get those hand-me-down financial skills, how to keep, you know, my accounts. I talked to Paul about it, a friend of mine.
Loads of adults don't know. Loads of adults even now get really intimidated by talking about finance and tax and the breakdown of what goes on, you know, in a family household. So what I do with my kids is we have pasta pieces, penne if you're interested. I divvy up the pasta as money and I get them to pay it into a pot. So I'll say, right, give me your tax. So they put in the penne. Give me your mortgage or rent. They put the penne in the bowl. Now we're going to divvy up gas, electricity, house insurance, school uniforms, food. And it goes on. And at the end, they're standing there with their one pasta piece. And I'm like, welcome to my world.
Bienvenue. How to take a compliment. We all like to feel accepted and valued by our peers, but sometimes taking that compliment that we've been hoping for is one of the hardest things to do.
I like that in America, where someone will say, that was really good. You'll go, no, it was nothing. And they'll say, oh, okay. And then you don't get the job because it was nothing. And it's quite a powerful thing just to say, thank you. Yeah, I tried really hard at that. Thanks.
Know your way around a toolbox. I mean, you just mentioned flatheads and Phillips screwdrivers, isn't it?
Yep.
For everyone who knows about it, because you would think, oh, but surely everybody knows about that. But the point is,
no.
You know, there's somebody who always knows something you don't. Everybody's better at something than you at least one thing. You know,
Well, I'm talking on the Phillips screwdrivers. Actually, it's interesting because I did put up a post on my Insta about, you know, knowing your way around a toolbox. And one guy said exactly that. Everybody knows this. Yeah. So you're teaching the basics.
Just so patronising.
The reason I put it in is I've worked with charities. It's quite sad where a lot of doors, for many reasons, have got broken latches, shall we say, and the mums don't know how to fix them.
Yeah.
And the children go into school and say, my door's got a broken latch. And so they don't have a clue. So it's all about just explaining, this is the tool you need.
Yeah.
These are the screws you need. You can fix your front door.
Yeah, and if they have to call out, and there are some brilliant call-out services now. There's some websites, you know, local traders and all that kind of stuff. But it's still 40 quid an hour. And, you know, if you...
And then some.
I know. Right, it's 9 o'clock. We've got to move on. What are you laughing at over there, Vassos?
Well, I mean, it's a very important book. Yes, CPR.
Oh, what's coming next? I mean, don't get me wrong. It's a very important
house
book.
House fires. Yes, riptides.
Yes. What do you mean, yes? Life-saving
stuff.
That have already saved lives.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
And there's still a book coming.
It turns out you don't... We on a jellyfish sting.
I know.
That's terrible
Sad
news.
Time. Sorry to take the fun out of it.
Yeah. I mean, you can still try.
Yeah. Unhear that, everyone. Rip out that page of the book.
It's one of those old wives' tales. Mm-hmm. You don't pee on a jellyfish. And most people think that's what goes on. You know what you do need, though? Mm-hmm. A credit card.
Well, to pay somebody else to pee.
Just a little scrape. Take the spines off. Just a little scrape and you're good.
That's it?
Yeah.
Who did you go to find that out?
Well, it's Navy Dad again, isn't
Navy
it?
Navy Dad.
And then obviously I've consulted the experts, the NHS and all sorts.
I have
fact checked.
What have you got planned for this weekend, Miley? What are you up to?
Kids. That'll keep me busy.
Kids, do you know what?
I've got a million children like you.
I can't believe I asked you the same question that really annoys me. I've got five children. What do you think I'm up to? Taxi service, takeaway service.
Dad cab all day long.
Exactly. All right. Great to see you.
Lovely to see you. Thank you.
Round of applause, Miley Kuskin.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
From building sites and factory floors to huge audiences on BBC One, our next guest has been on quite a journey. His memoir, Making It, How Love, Kindness and Community Helped Me Repair My Life, is out now. So please sit comfortably on a very well-upholstered chair and listen to the razor-sharp Jay Blaine.
How are we doing?
You guys all right?
Oh, mate, it's great to have you. No, we're fantastic, actually.
That's
good.
Thank you for that intro. That's quality, man.
I know.
Nice one.
Those intros leave with him today.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
That's not good.
By the way, it's like King Crustacean in here. Don't mind these. These have been a load of money for Ukraine, for Auction for Ukraine to be here
bless
today.
You. Bless your cotton socks.
Should we have a live round of applause for Jay Blaine? Yay! Woo! Jay, what a story. What a life.
And tell me about it.
You've still got plenty of it to live, hopefully. Jay Blades, MBE, Making It, How Love, Kindness, Community Helped Me Repair My Life. The Sunday Times bestseller already is out now. Yeah. I was reading your book yesterday and I got up to where you were 30 and I was exhausted. I felt like I'd been beaten up, unlike you, who had been beaten up.
I've been beaten up loads of times. I've been beaten up by the police. I've been beaten up by people at my school. But then I just started fighting. So it was constant fighting, yeah.
Because you sort of had to.
Yeah, no.
Which is a terrible thing to say, but it's true, isn't it?
No, I had to. It was either that where I grew up, it's either you become a victim and then people pick on you and that's it, that's your life mapped out. And I didn't really want to be a victim. And I started at secondary school protecting all the victims. So people that were being bullied, they used to pay me in puddings. I love school dinners. I can't get enough of them. but only on trifle day. Trifle day, it wasn't a case. No one was protecting on that day because I didn't like trifle. But they would come to me and say, well, this person's taking my pencil case or this one took my money, took my glasses and so on and so forth, and I'll go with my band of merry men and we'll get that stuff back for them.
By talking about specs, you're smashing a very cool pair of specs.
They are quite nice, aren't they?
They sit on your nose. You've got a great nose, by the way.
Thank you. That's the first time anybody's ever said that to me. I've got a nice nose.
You have got a beautiful, aesthetically you have a beautiful face. It's beautifully balanced.
Cool, blimey, what do you want?
I don't know anything. But I'm serious.
I know you're serious. What are you after?
I'm after.
Are we going out tonight?
If you like.
All right.
Go after the show if you want.
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm reading your book. I'm thinking, when is he going to get to working on the telly? And it sort of gets mentioned at the end. because you've been on the telly, as far as we know, or most of us recognise now, only for 5 years from 2017. You know, so late into your 40s, TV came calling, didn't it?
Yeah, it was about 46. So right. I've lived a bit of a life until then. And then TV's come along, repair shop. We started on BBC Two and then moved over to One and then it just went bang.
Can we just have a round of applause for the repair?
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
It's sort of one of the shows you tell it was made for. We'll get onto that in a bit. But back to your childhood. Two phrases that jumped out at me from the book, from your childhood, was the Ridley Road look.
Oh, wow.
Tell us about that.
God, blimey. That's, I think, every person who's been down Ridley Road with their mum, especially the Caribbean mums, they give you this look. We've even had the Ridley Road look come in to the repair shop. There's been a couple of items that people have brought in, and they've given Steve the Ridley Road look. It's that look where it says, don't mess with me. Yeah. I wait till I get you home. Mum gives you that look. She doesn't have to say anything. But you know you're in trouble. You know you've done something wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And why did she give it you the first time?
Look, the first time was basically I asked for something. That's all it was. I said, oh, can I have that? And it was a case where I think she didn't have the money. So she felt embarrassed that she couldn't pay for it.
Yeah.
And then it was in front of some of her friends. And she just gave me that look like, don't ask again. And I never asked again. Simple.
Yeah. So from our wives, Vess and I, we often talk about the death stare.
The death stare.
Which is the sort of, that's the yours is the parental version. This is the partner version, the partnership version. But we do get it from Rachel sometimes.
She does a good
stare. Yeah. Rachel, you're joking. Not from Rachel. Look at that. She
Somebody needs to keep them in line.
Okay.
Yeah.
I understand.
See, now she's raising her eyebrow, which is the beginning of the overture to the death stare. And actually, Jay, by saying that, you were nearly on the wrong end of a death stare.
Ironically.
Okay. And the other phrase that comes out isn't so much a phrase, it's more of an acronym.
Yeah.
TMWCTMB. And you say in the first chapter, forgive me for this, but you're going to be hearing a lot more about this character. What do those letters stand for?
Those letters stand for the man that contributed towards my birth. Now, I'm a great believer. If there's a mechanic that doesn't fix cars, you can't call him a mechanic. So anybody who wants the title as my father or my dad has to live up to that kind of example.
Has to do the dad bit.
He has to do the dad bit. So he hasn't done that. So the only thing he's done really is contributed towards my birth. And that's the way I see it.
But he did reappear, didn't he, from time to time in your childhood for various different reasons, which you talk about.
Yeah, he did reappear. And he reappeared lately as well. Called me up. He had the audacity to say that all this success that I've had is down to him. And I said, really? How'd you work that one out?
Yeah, how did that go? I was like,
how did you work that? Well, I'm a carpenter and I've done... I said, I didn't even know that. I said, the one thing I must applaud you for, what you've taught me, is how not to be a father. So thank you for that. And I bid you good day. And that was it. Put the phone down.
Okay. Yeah. Good for you, pal.
Yeah.
Reading was a no-go, which is ironic because you have a book out. But you talk about how the book came to be and how you, you know, because my little boy, one of my little boys, you know, he was challenged by reading.
Right.
And thank goodness we've overcome it due to this amazing organisation called the Key Clinic. It's about unlocking these things called retaining reflexes, which can often lead to dyslexia, which you might want to know about, actually.
Okay, cool.
Because it can stay with you for a long, long time.
Yeah.
But you ended up going to university. but you couldn't tell them, or you didn't want to tell them that you couldn't read. And I'm fast forwarding here, but there's so much in the book.
There's
it's
a lot.
So good. Just speak to that experience.
Well, basically, university, I met someone when I was doing some volunteering in the community, and she was a really intelligent lady. And I said to her, well, how come you're so intelligent? And she said to me, oh, I've been to university. So me and my naive self thought, if I go to university, I'm going to get intelligence, full stop. I'm going to come out brainy. I didn't know that I had to read a book. When I went there, they said to me, oh, you have to write a letter to see if you can come in. So I went to the library, tapped in on the internet and asked for acceptance letters. So I had a letter. There's loads that came up, but there was one that jumped out at me and a woman was reading it to me in the library. It was a guy that was living in Brooklyn that wanted to go to Harvard. So he wrote all this stuff and then he got an acceptance. So what I did is I copied that letter. I took out Brooklyn and I put in High Wycombe and then I added in High Wycombe University and I got an unconditional offer. And then when I got to university, the first day I was being taught by this professor of criminology, and basically he was teaching like you wouldn't. Everything he was saying was going over me. Yeah, I didn't really understand it. So I'm looking around the lecture theatre. Everybody's scribbling away. So I asked this girl beside me, "Do you understand what he's saying?" She says, "No, I'm just writing. I'm just writing these key points." And I'm like, "But he's supposed to teach us, isn't he?"
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like, yeah, but just write. And I'm like, no, I'm not having that. So I put my hand up and he goes to me, oh, well, do you want to go to the toilet? I said, no, I just want to understand. I don't get what you're talking about. I think you've got the teaching ability of a peanut. So I think you need to dumb it down for us. We've just started it. And he gave me, I wouldn't say the mum look, but he gave me a look that told me, like, you need to shut up.
Jay, we're out of time. You're awesome.
Oh, bless
you. Real pleasure to meet you, pal.
Likewise.
And by the way, if the producers are strictly listening, it's a yes. Right, Jay Blades, making it. How Love, Kindness, Community helped me repair my life. Jay Blades, everyone.
Thank you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
We've heard from a bunch of undeniably fantastic guests already, but still to come, the super chef Tom Kerridge gets us excited ahead of this year's Pub in the Park with some bonus killer barbecue super hacks. Rugby union rock star Lawrence Delalio and Spanish cyclist Jose Pereira share all about Delalio Cycle Slam and raising loads of cash for Lawrence's charity Rugby Works. Journalist Oliver Berkman blows our mind with his latest book, 4,000 Weeks, which is about how long we're all going to live. Time management for more. And Hollywood superstar Minnie Driver tells us about maybe the best autobiography I've ever read, her brand new memoir, Managing Expectations. So let's get right back to Dapper Dave for the last time ever before you leave. Who's next?
From classic movies with wonderful stops in music and podcasts, she's arrived at her next destination. Books, and she does not disappoint. Her superb memoir, Managing Expectations, is out today, and here to tell us all about it is the most excellent of essayists. It's Minnie Driver!
Hello, Minnie Driver!
Hello.
It's been a while, Minnie. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
Fantastic. We are all in love with A, you always have been, but B, your book is fantastic.
Oh, come on, thank you.
No, seriously, we all said the same thing. It's one of the best, if not the best, autobiographies we've ever read.
Oh, my God.
Honestly.
Oh,
it's so
guys.
Cool. It's so beautifully written. You know, it's prosaic, it's punchy, it's funny, you know, it's concise, it's heartfelt, it's clever. it skips along. Couldn't put it down. Could not put it down.
I'm honestly about to cry. Like, I am a bit tired, but I'm really, like, that... I'm so proud.
I know you, do lots of things, you know, you have many colours to your rainbow, but you should do this because you're really good at it. It's a great book. It's the most original autobiography I've also read because of the way you have written it. Let's get on to it. Look, it's so good, everybody listening. Minnie's hair gets its own chapter. And by the way, it's, you know, it lives up to all those pages.
You know, my hair is a, it, yeah, I mean, it needs its own podcast, really. It's properly, you know, it's an extra part of me and always has been. It took me a while to wrangle it properly.
You learned to accept and embrace your hair. And,
yes.
And it's become one of your signatures, hasn't it?
Yeah. And I think that's the whole, that notion of it's so difficult when you're young, allowing for the fact that parts of you are going to evolve that are really awkward and difficult. But they do. And then that evolution brings its own problems and challenges. And it's, you know, I think that's the kind of central thesis of the book is that nothing's ever really working out, but it is working out, just often how you know, you didn't expect it to.
Well, I think it's just called life, isn't it? You
yes.
know, don't be surprised by anything yes. that happens. You know, yes. absolutely, there may be challenging things that happen, but don't be surprised by anything that happens because things happen. And therefore, don't mind what happens because that's just a waste of time getting in the way with dealing or enjoying what is going on in your life.
But it's also completely impossible because we get wrapped up in our stories you know, the stories that we tell ourselves in our head and that society or partners or school or our work tells us. And it's kind of unpicking that and unravelling it is part of what's interesting and definitely part of what's very hard.
The way you've written your story, you know, it's a romp. I mean, it hits the ground running a million miles an hour. You know, we all know, come on, we've got to admit it. The first couple of chapters of autobiographies about people's childhoods. Yeah, they are. The more you read autobiographies and the more mature you become, the more interesting they are. But how many of us read the last two-thirds of an autobiography first? But you don't do that with yours. It does talk about your childhood, but it's like, I don't know, it's like a sort of light Fandango high-tripping drama. And you think, well, somebody's got to make a show about this kid. It starts when you're nine, then it goes back to when you're six, then it jumps forward to when you're nine again.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, lots of interesting things happened to me when I was six and nine, and then again when I was 11. It's funny because I when I tell the stories or I think about the stories, they are like playing films in my head.
Yeah.
Like they, it's like watching a movie, and I see that little girl, and she really makes me laugh. But I don't know. Like you're right. People talking about their childhoods can often be, well, it's like people telling you their dreams. Like
yeah.
they're really interesting to them.
Yeah.
But like,
wedding videos.
Yeah.
Things like. But this isn't like that at all. It's hilarious. It's absolutely 100% hilarious. Now, your mum and dad, as parents, they come good in the end. But let's face it, for the first couple of chapters, you know, nowadays they wouldn't get through child protection
yes.
Guidelines, would they?
Yeah, no.
Give the listeners a sense of what might happen without them having read the book.
Well, I did get into an argument with my dad when I was about 11, and he lived in the Caribbean in Barbados.
Yes.
And he was so cross with me, he said I had to leave the house and I had to go back to England. But because there wasn't a direct flight that night, he put me on a plane to Miami, where I stayed for a day and a night in this hotel called the Fontainebleau Hotel, which, you know, in 1981 in Miami was just as you'd imagine. It was a den of iniquity. And
you
I arrived
were
there.
11?
I was 11 by
and
myself.
On your own?
Yes.
And nobody in the hotel, yeah. everybody thought in the hotel, okay, where's her mum and dad, or her mum or dad, or her guardian, or somebody who's older than 11? And you got used to saying, you owned it, didn't you? You said, you took over the agency of that. No, I'm on my own. My dad has sent me here, and I'm fine, thank you. And can you put everything on my
yeah,
dad's account?
I did. I ran
account.
Up his credit card, which was my, I think, my revenge. And then I was sort of adopted by a Cuban dissident who was exiled in Miami and sitting in a cabana. And I mean, I guess things could have gone really horribly wrong, but they really didn't. And I think I established this independence that went on to make me be able to leave my lovely home in England and move 7,000 miles away to California. Like, it was really forged in that, you know, 11, wandering around this crazy pool with people doing all kinds of scary, weird things.
Your mum said on her deathbed, didn't she, as she was experiencing her own end-of-life care, she says, I know I've been a rubbish mum. Yeah. And you said, Mum, you haven't been a rubbish mum. You've had rubbish moments.
Exactly. That whole... Again, the distillation when you're dying of all those things and maybe helping to just clear those last things away. She was always worried about that and being able to have that conversation and go, you were not. You did. You had these rubbish moments like we all do. That's not the totality of a person.
Right, you got to go because you're on this morning.
Oh, on this
which
morning,
is one of the things
morning.
We like saying most.
You really know where you are.
Yeah, no, you do, especially working on this program for 100 years. Minnie, great to see you again.
Chris, thank you. Thank you so much.
What an awesome book. You got to get this book in your life. Minnie Driver, her brand new book, Managing Expectations, is published today. Ta-da.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He's famous for cooking up a storm in the kitchen, and he's pretty tasty when it comes to festival lineups too. The proof in that particular pudding is upon us. Pub in the Park Marlowe is back from tomorrow, and here to tell us all about it is the Michelin-starred Marlifornia man, Tom Kerridge.
Yeah, good morning, Tom. There's so much to talk about. How are you, Tom?
I'm very well, thank you, mate. I'm loving the radio show this Chief.
Excellent. Thank you very much indeed. Right, tomorrow on the telly, Rob and Ramesh versus restaurants. What happened?
Oh, mate. I mean, those two guys, I mean, they're incredible, brilliant, funny, amazing people, entered into running a restaurant full-blooded like they do. Any challenges that you put in front of them, they take it on. But we put them through their paces a little bit. You might have seen a few of the adverts thrown about where they're carrying drinks and plates and stuff. Working with Matt, who's one of our senior front of house guys, they have a complete nightmare. It's a car crash. And then we get them into the kitchen and it's like they're trying to open a restaurant. So it's a big call for them. I got to be honest. I won't tell you how it goes, but they go on a journey is probably the best way of describing it.
Did either of them have any natural ability in any discipline you put them through?
Let's think of a polite way of saying this. Ramesh cooked me dinner at his house and it was very, very tasty. There we go. That's about as far as I
right.
can go with it.
Okay, what about Rob? Anything at all from Rob?
Yeah.
No.
Well, he followed a recipe with a machine and it kind of worked, but there wasn't any heart or soul in it. It's good fun though. You know what? They're very confident. They're very good with guests.
Yeah, no, they are. They've been very good front of house, sort of, wouldn't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, honestly, top guys. It's on Sky. Incredibly entertaining, brilliantly funny. And I love the two of them to bits.
All right, listen, we've been promised a third weekend heatwave. The last two didn't happen, and I took a lot of stick for it. I was only repeating what the forecasters had told me, but we are hearing, and I've triple-checked everything here now. There should be a heatwave kicking in from today, a little bit today, a lot tomorrow, and then loads over the weekend for basically all of the UK. Hopefully people will be cracking open their barbecues. Tom, just give us three super barbecue hacks, if you don't mind.
Honestly, it's a marinade and it's things on skewers. That is by far the best way of doing it because you can get them done. Things like a chicken that's been marinated in some yogurt and some spices. Then you can go like Indian style spices or North African spices. Mix it all together in the yogurt. Put chicken thighs. Now, this is the thing. Chicken thighs rather than breast meat, okay? Because thighs have got just that little bit more moisture. They cook deliciously and low and slow. So stick them onto a skewer with the yogurt mix on it. Leave them to marinate. And then the next day, that yogurt's kind of tenderized the meat. And then you just brush it off just a little bit, not too much, okay? And then grill it on your outdoor barbecue on a medium heat, not high, not so there's the big flames or it's super hot. Medium heat, get it nice charred, beautiful flavours. That yogurt marinade is a brilliant way of kind of like tenderising and bringing flavour.
Right, now one of the best barbecues, this is all serendipitous and segues beautifully into what's happening this weekend across the river from where we both live. One of the best barbecue displays I ever saw was at Pub in the Park last year. Rock yeah. and roll barbecues, Pub in the Park taking place again from Thursday, an added extra date. Pubinthepark.uk.com is where you need to go. Loads of rock and roll, more rock and roll than you can shake a stick at. By the way, you are giving Carfest a run for its money on the rock and roll in the rock and roll lane. So you know, we're happy to for you to share our lane, Tom. But you know, there is definitely There are turrets and snipers just on standby. Should you go too far,
my friend, I consider ourselves like your slightly poorer cousin. That's probably the best way. we're in the same family. It's all cool.
But look at the lineup. It's amazing musically. Anyway, so musically, people can go and have a look. I mean, but it's awesome from Thursday all the way through to Sunday. You're talking about Sister Sledge, McFly, The Faithless, and Judge Jules and Regan Berman and The Feeling and Hughie Morgan and The Brand New Heavies and that's the name, like, you know, 20 out of the 40 odd you've got going on. But tell us about the food, because that's why people, your disciples flock to your buffet and your feasting because of who this year?
Well, there's so many great chefs. Obviously, Atul Kulchi's there. We're there. We've got Paul Ainsworth is there. Andrew Pern is there. Steve Terry is there. Some great, great cooks coming and doing some beautiful cookery demonstrations. The food that you can buy is absolutely stunning. The weather, like you say, this weekend is going to be incredible. There are tickets, I think, for Thursday, Sunday night. Happy Mondays are playing, and what a way to finish Marlowe with Happy Mondays and the Brand New Heavies. But also lastly, like you said, we did this outdoor cookery kind of fire pit demo stuff that was going on, and this year we're making it much bigger and better, and it's sitting next to the main kind of like chef demo stage where we've got loads of chefs cooking, and they're doing normal cooking like you would at home, but then also we're getting them involved in the fire pit cooking. So the understanding of what you can do with flames, what you can do with smoke and coal, and how you can cook outdoors. And it creates this wonderful, immersive, exciting experience. And we're so looking forward to this weekend.
Yeah, it's cool, man. I mean, it's really great. And it's evolved its own atmosphere, Pop in the Park. It's rock and roll everything, if you like. It's like a rock and roll food festival. So all the chefs in between what they're doing on stage, you know, or from a professional point of view, they're like hanging out with the musicians, or they're going on the boats. And so it's just a very cool atmosphere. Everybody, you know, is up for a laugh. They're in the groove. They're sort of working and they're not working, you know, or they're having fun, or they're playing with what they do for a living, and everybody's enjoying it. And it's all the better for being in the sunshine. It's just super special. Congratulations, pal. It's become a real thing, Pub in the Park.
Thanks, mate. It's very, you know, like Carfest. When, you know, I've been very fortunate to be able to come to Carfest loads of times. And when we see you guys there and you're working so hard, but at the same time you're having fun, and if people at the festival that are working the festival having fun, then it kind of flows into the park, it flows into the space that all the guests that are turning up feel that they're already joining a party. So it just creates this one amazing kind of party atmosphere, and we love it very much.
Great to talk to you, mate. Good luck with the build. I've seen
you
it,
too,
I've witnessed
mate.
It. It's all going on over the river there. That's Pub in the Park, uk.com for tickets, and all around the country throughout the summer, kicking off this weekend.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
What better way to raise money than hopping on a bike and hurtling around Spain and Portugal? The incredible Delalio Cycle Slam is coming to an end, but there's still time to say wham, bam, thank you, Cycle Slam, to the Lycra-clad fundraising superheroes that are Lawrence Delalio and Jose Pereira.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Chris. Good morning, everyone.
How are you doing? You sound sore.
I am sore. And let me tell you, it's been an epic journey. As you know, I've done this for about 12 years now, every 2 years. And we've been cycling, I don't know, nearly 10 days. I'd say roughly about 150 kilometres a day. All raising money. It's been about 38, 40 degrees, which doesn't help. I weigh about 18 stone, which definitely doesn't help. And this young man, who's been part of the programme now for a long, long time, he's only been on a road bike 5 times in his whole life, and he has completed the most amazing journey. So well done to Jose.
All right, let's talk to Jose now. Good morning, Jose.
Good morning. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm very well. Can you share a little part of your life journey with people listening, please, Jose?
Yeah, of course. So 7 years ago, I first moved to the country, to the UK, with no English whatsoever. And I didn't feel like I had the support to try and develop myself. However, in a way, I got lucky to be put into a people for a unit, which is where I met. It's where I got introduced to Rugby Works, and ever since I've been connected with them, and they have provided me with opportunities that I would have never been able to really operate.
Yeah, to the extent that Jose had never played rugby before, but he's now a coach and also has his own multi-million pound sneaker business. Lawrence, that's all pretty impressive. How might that have happened, do you think?
Well, listen, for Jose to arrive in the UK and then to be put in a pupil referral unit in itself tells you everything you need to know about the system in the United Kingdom.
Yeah,
65% of everyone in the prison population has been excluded from mainstream education, and they end up in pupil referral units. And what the programme does, Rugby Works, is obviously introduce Jose and many others to rugby, but it's about giving them self-esteem, building up their confidence, giving them the skills to really develop in life. You know, no young people in the UK are born bad. They're just born into what we chaotic circumstances and very difficult conditions. And, we all need, love, support, help, and the ability to make the right life choices. And Jose is being very humble, really. He couldn't speak a word of English. He was put in a pupil referral unit. He didn't know anyone. He got involved in the programme. He's been through college. He's ended up going to university, got himself a degree. And now he's come on board and started working with us. And I can't tell you how inspired and impressed I am with his journey. We work with about 1,000 young kids across the UK, in London, but all over. And it's something that really the government needs to take far more seriously, because, as I said, currently your chances in life, if you end up in a pupil referral unit, ultimately most of those young men and women end up in prison.
Lawrence, thank you for everything you're doing, A. B, I'm tempted to say you were a born leader. You've always been a born leader. Do you feel that's been the case?
Bad born leader. I mean, I think my mother, who sadly passed in 2008, she gave me two things in life, really. Unconditional love, which is, I've got children of my own. It's an easy thing to say. It's a hard thing to actually give. And a belief and support system that anything and everything is possible, that you can go out there and conquer the world. And if you've got those two things in life, you've got a pretty good start. And I think, that's certainly what we try and do with the young people that we work with. You shoot to the moon, you'll be amongst the stars.
Yeah, no, I love that. Through the main programme, the Delalio Scholarship, Rugby for Change and the Duke of Edinburgh Award, you and your charity have helped support hundreds of young people develop and improve their lives for the better. Setting up a charity or thinking about setting up a charity is one thing. Doing it is entirely another. How have you found that?
Yeah, it is tough. There's no doubt about it. If you're going to put your name above the door and you're going to put your name to something, it's got to be authentic, genuine. When I did a lot of research around the charitable space, there's some amazing charities. Chris, I know you work with many, many different charities, but not many people working with young, disadvantaged, excluded young people. And the reason why is because it's not very sexy, it's not very glamorous, and it's pretty tough to get results. But, I don't want these young men and women to be society's forgotten young people. I'm very passionate about that. And I know how much sport played such a big role in turning my life around after I lost my sister on the Marchioness in 1989. And certainly Jose is a shining example of how the programme has turned his life around as well. So with the support of all of you guys out there, the charity can grow and grow. And every 2 years, I have to get on a bike. As you say, I'm not really built for climbing with mountains, but we all do it. And we raise huge awareness and huge amounts of money.
All right. DelalioRugbyWorks.com is where you need to go to find out more and to help and support all the amazing work Lawrence and his team are up to.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He's an author and journalist that's always a welcome distraction, but not too much of a distraction. His book, 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals, is out now. So it's time to talk about time and how to make a fine time of the finite time you have with the brilliant Oliver Bergman.
Oliver Bergman is in the house. Okay, we talked about 4,000 Weeks when it was available in hardback. It's Beach Read paperback available now, and it's awesome. And he's here in person, which is great because I've never met you in person before. Oliver, welcome to the 17th floor.
It's a huge pleasure to be here.
Mate, your book is amazing. I know you have been the most surprised about how successful it's become. Just tell us about that.
Well, I mean, you know, it's basically about how we're all incredibly finite and we have to face death and all these topics that are basically kind of potentially pretty full of disappointment and despair, but I don't think they are ultimately. So, yeah, I was assuming that people might not want to spend a lot of time.
It's a worldwide bestseller now, isn't it?
It's been a bestseller in a few places.
Oh,
yeah,
mate, congratulations. Let's just cut to the chase here. It's very much about the fact, you know, with everything we do in our lives, we are paying. We pay for everything we do with our life on a not minute by minute basis, but a second by second basis, and also, you know, virtually parallel with our actions, always in our minds.
Right. Yeah. There's all these unlived lives. Every single moment, you're choosing a path from a million potential paths and closing off all the other ones. You know, ultimately, I think this is where I think this is a liberating message, because it's so inevitable that whatever we do with our lives, we're going to leave all these alternative lives unlived, that there's just no point fighting it, right? It's not like people worry about the fear of missing out as if there was a way of maybe not missing out if you got your time management just right and really pushed yourself. But you're going to miss out on almost everything that you could have done with your life. And I think that's a reason to really throw yourself into the life that you do choose.
Which is why you've concocted this amazing phrase, JOMO, to go up against FOMO. And by the way, you know, it thrashes it with a knockout punch in the first round, in my opinion. FOMO, the fear of missing out. Forget that. JOMO, the joy of missing out. Why? Because we have no choice but to miss out on most of everything.
Right. And I think that when you really take that on board, it actually makes the choices that you do make kind of more meaningful. If you realise that you're deciding to spend a bit of time with your kids or go and see a particular friend, if you realize that when you do that, you're spurning all these other things you could have been doing, it's like a real affirmation of that choice. It's like, okay, I'm doing this because I care about it, and you get to sort of be more present in it and take it more joyfully, I think, than if you didn't realize and you thought that, you know, you still had all those other options open for how to use that portion of time.
Yeah, tell us about the wonder of Elizabeth Gilbert from a personal point of view, and how she might feature in your book 4,000 Weeks.
Well, I think she's a fantastic writer and thinker, and she's, you know, she famously wrote the book Eat, Pray, Love, but and a whole lot of others. And she makes this amazing point that, like, everyone tells you you've got to learn to say no, and that the secret to a sane and balanced life is figuring out how to say no. But almost everybody, she says, and I agree, secretly thinks that just means learning to say no to all the things you didn't really want to do in the first place, so that you can make enough time for all the things that really matter. And she makes this, I think, brilliant point that actually, no, it's a lot harder than that. It means learning to say no to a whole bunch of things that would have been good uses of your time that you did want to do. When I decide to spend the afternoon with my son, say, it's not because some of the other things I would have done with that time were all rubbish. They would have been really good, meaningful uses of my time too. But unfortunately, because we're finite and have so little time and don't live forever, you're going to have to do that anyway. And it's hard, but I actually think that once you take it on board, it's not really that hard again, because there's just no escape from it. There's no solution to this. So you can sort of stop beating yourself up for not having found that solution.
Yeah, and that is a waste of time within itself, isn't it? We all do it, beat ourselves up. There's all the negative self-talk that goes on. Now, we don't have that much time. We have, on average, 4,000 weeks, which is the title of Oliver's amazing book. But that's clock time. You can always, if you like, and I'm a big fan of this, and Oliver definitely is, you can also always go for deep time instead, which is far more enjoyable.
I think, you know, we all do have these little experiences. They're really thin on the ground these days, unfortunately, but we do have this experience of sort of entering into some kind of dimension of time where it feels like the clock has stopped, where it doesn't feel like there's any pressure on your time. You know, it happens for some people in beautiful natural landscapes, or with a newborn baby, or maybe if you're the kind of person who goes on weird meditation retreats like I have done, you can get it in the middle of one of those. And it's just this reminder that we don't actually have to live all our time with this sense of like a timeline running alongside us, and are we keeping up with it, and are we letting those portions pass without having used them productively enough. Like, you have to have a lot of that in any normal modern life, I think, but it's really useful to just remember that this is kind of a construction. We've decided to add this kind of set of this yardstick that runs beside our lives and stresses us out, and you can just sort of step away from it from time to time. Right?
We got to go now. Got to wrap this up, Oliver. But you also speak to the fact so wisely and so beautifully. You know, the best way to be original is to start unoriginal, because that's where the real originality comes from. And if you get hooked on trying to be original, that in itself is counterproductive.
Right. There are all sorts of universal experiences in relationships, in work, in just being alive, that, like, if you are allergic to them because they're universal and, like, I got to be different and special, you'll never get the value that is lying in them. Absolutely.
Right. We really have. We're over time. Oliver, you've been amazing, mate. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
See us anytime you like. Oliver Berkman's paperback edition of the amazing worldwide best-selling 4,000 Weeks Time Management for Mortals is out now. We'll be back tomorrow. Bye-bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget, you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.